The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Ukraine withdraws from a key eastern city as Russia expands its territorial hold. Plus, states pledge new firearm rules after the Supreme Court expands gun rights, and get ready for a major stock index reshuffle.
So FTSE Russell is undergoing a huge rebalancing today, one that will ripple through trillions of dollars of actively managed and passively managed investments.
It's Friday, June 24th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukraine has ordered a military withdrawal from the eastern city of Severodonetsk to avoid an encirclement by Russian forces. That ends a battle that lasted nearly 2 months and brings Russia close to taking over the entirety of Ukraine's Luhansk region, which is a part of the larger Donbas area. Russian President Vladimir Putin had announced the liberation of the Donbas as his principal war aim after initial efforts to seize the capital, Kyiv, collapsed. European Union leaders agreed Thursday to make Ukraine and neighboring Moldova official candidates to join the bloc. The move opens the door to possible EU membership, though the process could take decades and has no guarantee of success. We'll have more on what candidate status means for Ukraine later in the show. Top officials in a number of Democratic-led states are vowing new gun regulations in the wake of yesterday's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to expand gun rights. That decision struck down New York's system for limiting concealed weapons permits and put into question similar laws in at least a half a dozen states. New York officials said they would look for new ways to limit handguns, especially in certain locations where they said firearms would be particularly dangerous. Meanwhile, California Attorney General Rob Bonta pledged to strengthen concealed carry permitting rules and expand the list of locations where firearms aren't allowed.
I'm disappointed, but also not surprised. We've been preparing for the possibility of this day for months, and we are ready and have already started to leap into action to respond.
The U.S. Federal Reserve's annual stress test has given the biggest U.S. banks a clean bill of health, saying they would be able to continue lending to households and businesses even in a severe recession. This year's hypothetical scenario was tougher than in 2021, the Fed said. It measured the 34 biggest banks' ability to maintain strong capital levels in a hypothetical recession marked by sharply higher unemployment of 10% and a steep decline of 55% in stock prices. How banks perform in the tests determines how much capital they must sock away for potential trouble. And we are exclusively reporting that customer service platform Zendesk is close to striking a buyout deal, according to people familiar with the matter. It could represent one of the biggest private equity takeovers of the year. Sources said a deal with a group that includes Hellman and Friedman and Permira could be struck in the coming days, assuming the talks don't fall apart. Stock indexes operated by FTSE Russell are due to undergo a major reshuffling later today. In addition to many routine additions and deletions, some notable tech companies like Facebook, Netflix, and PayPal are due to be shuffled into the Russell 1000 Value Index. So, does that mean Facebook and Netflix are value stocks? WSJ Markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee is here to bring us up to speed on what the FTSE Russell is planning to signal with these moves. Hi, Gunjan.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So tell us about some of the most notable changes we are due to see and what is driving them.
That's right. So FTSE Russell is undergoing a huge rebalancing today, one that will ripple through trillions of dollars of actively managed and passively managed investments. And basically, they are rejiggering the indexes that they manage. And as passive investing has grown in popularity, these indexes have gotten even more popular. some of the big changes that we're going to see is that hot tech stocks like Facebook, Netflix, PayPal, even Pinterest are going to be moving over to the value index, and their influence in the growth index is going to dwindle significantly. So if you're holding a growth ETF or a value ETF, for example, you might want to look under the hood and see, hey, what is actually in this ETF? Because it could change from Friday to Monday after this rebalancing. Another big change that's happening is that because energy companies have been such star performers this year, a bunch of them are being promoted to the Russell 1000 index from the Russell 2000 index of small companies. Basically, those companies have grown in size, so they're going to be part of ETFs tied to larger companies. So within moments at the close of trading Friday, we're going to see a frenzy of activity. JP Morgan estimates that more than $100 billion will change hands in the final moments of the day.
And what does it say about these tech companies in particular and their recent performance that they are heading into the value index now?
I mean, this has been a pivotal year for tech. And what we've seen is that this decade-long dominance that tech saw in the market has basically come to an end. All these stocks, Netflix, PayPal, Facebook, they have fallen significantly this year and been a key source of volatility in the broader markets. And in some ways, they've fallen so much that now they look like bargain stocks, at least according to FTSE Russell. And this is a shift from recent years where these stocks were so popular, investors kept piling into them, they kept paying up more and more for them, that they looked expensive to many investors rather than like bargains.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee. Gunjan, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we'll head to Brussels to discuss the significance of Ukraine becoming an official EU membership candidate. That story after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Last night, the leaders of the European Union's 27 member states agreed to allow Ukraine to become an official EU membership candidate. The decision was made unanimously, but does that mean the bloc is truly united in its commitment to welcoming in Ukraine one day? That is one of a number of questions still swirling around this week's EU summit in Brussels. WSJ reporter Lawrence Norman joins us now from Berlin with the very latest on that meeting. Lawrence, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
So what is the practical meaning of gaining candidate status for Ukraine? Does it really change anything in the short or medium term practically?
Practically, no, it doesn't change anything in the short or medium term. There's no bonanza of funds or help that comes with being a candidate status of the EU. But it is powerful symbolically, and there is one very direct effect. There is now a path that Ukraine has to joining the EU. There is a path that's very long, and it's very uncertain that Ukraine will reach the end of it. But they know what they have to do. They know what the reforms are. They know what the work is that they would have to do. And if they follow that path, they could become EU members. As of Wednesday, the day before the meeting, that was blocked. That wasn't open. That wasn't possible and offered. So in that sense, there is a real change here. But largely in the short term, this is a political message of support for Ukraine at a time of war with Russia from the Europeans.
Lawrence, did the EU sketch out what Ukraine is going to need to do in order to gain eventual membership?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And really it's split into two stages here. The EU have given Ukraine a list of four things that they want Ukraine to do in order to actually start negotiating on EU membership. That's probably not even going to start for another 18 months, 2 years. But there are four things they need to do. One is to tackle the power of oligarchs in the country. The second is to beef up an office which cracks down on corruption. The third is to appoint a bunch of senior judges to entrench judicial independence. And there's a fourth, rather techie one. Those are things that the Ukraine will have to do in order to enter into negotiations with the EU. Then if that happens, Ukraine will have to implement the broad range of economic political reforms to integrate itself with the EU that every other member has had to go through. The real goal for Ukraine and for Zelensky is to deal with the three or four items that the Commission has said are key to actually opening negotiations. If he's able to do that in the next 18 months and actual accession talks begin, this would start to look like a more irreversible process.
Is it clear, Lawrence, what cleared up some of the internal EU divisions that previously existed over whether to grant Ukraine EU candidate status?
I think what was decisive here, I mean, there were a small block of countries that approved, that were pushing the idea of giving Ukraine an EU path back in late February, early March. Poland, the Baltic states, those who've been most forceful in supporting Ukraine, but it really wasn't a majority view. I think what switched it was an agreement between Germany, France and Italy that swung behind this idea. And as so often in the EU, when the Germans, the French and the Italians agree on something, it becomes quite difficult to resist.
Will this agreement be enough, do you think, to keep European Union members united in helping Ukraine and sanctioning Russia in what could and really does look to be a protracted war now, considering all the stresses they've been facing lately, energy and otherwise?
So we need to keep these two tracks very, very distinct. There is now an EU candidate track. It's long, many years ahead, very, very difficult, but that is one track. There is a separate track that's been in place really since Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 and caused trouble in Ukraine's east. And that has been, you know, very significant. Even before the war, something like 20 billion euros worth of loans and grants given to Ukraine to help the country since 2014. So that assistance is separate from the candidate status process. I would expect that economic assistance to continue. And the sanctions process against Russia is also separate from Ukraine's EU path. They've passed six packages of sanctions. We'll see as the summer goes what the situation is, but it's certainly the case that the EU is divided on how much further to go on sanctions, but that has no bearing on the Ukraine's now open path to the European Union.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Lawrence Norman joining us today from Berlin. Lawrence, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you very much.
And finally, visitors showing up at New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art to see a marble statue of pop star Rihanna have consistently left disappointed. The problem? Well, the statue doesn't exist. WSJ reporter Joseph Pisani says the confusion stems from an Instagram post by Vogue magazine after Vogue learned that Rihanna, who was pregnant at the time, wouldn't attend this year's Met Gala.
So they asked Rihanna if it was okay if they created this tribute to her, which was this digital statue using a photo of Rihanna from her Vogue cover shoot. They turned that photo into basically fake stone. And they tried to make it look as real as they could, but the statue doesn't exist.
However, for anyone duped by the digital marble, Pisani says there's a silver lining.
There's a fashion exhibit downstairs, and one of the mannequins is wearing lingerie from Rihanna's Savage X Fenty line. So there is a little bit of Rihanna in the museum, if you look.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.